It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
You like fighting a woman?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo! I am a one-man wrecking crew.
Welcome to episode 615 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Labor Day weekend. It is Sunday, September 1st, 2019. I am the Solid Monster. Summer, I guess unofficially over, right? That's pretty much the end of summer once we turn the page to September. Although I always say September is the month where we get the best weather. So at least we'll have a month or so. Nice cool weather, nice cool down, none of this 95 degree nonsense that we've had. Hopefully no more power outages either, Con Ed. So I actually rather enjoy September as we head into the fall season. And I also enjoy a good day off from work, which is why Labor Day is always so much fun. Now, I had to get up early this morning. Many of you may know I posted on social media. I was on NBC this morning, locally here in New York, which was a very big thing for me to be able to go on there to talk about my mom and promote her book, The Adventure of Hardy the Horse, which is now available in ebook format, by the way. The Kindle version is available, although the hardcover, you can't beat the hardcover. I get it's a little pricier, but you guys have been sending in photos to me holding the book, your kids holding the book. To me, there's nothing cooler than getting a photo like that. So anyway, I just saw that the current allotment is out. We have to restock now, which is great. But I was on NBC this morning with Pat Battle. Pat Battle has been at NBC here locally in New York for ages. I mean, she's the veteran face of the channel there. So for me to be able to go on with her and talk about, you know, my mother for 3 or 4 minutes was a very cool thing. I did post a link to the video for those of you interested. If you want to see video of the segment, it has been posted online. I did share it on Twitter and Facebook. But the other thing is, as I'm sitting in the green room waiting to go on, they had a guest on before me. And he was on promoting, I think, his restaurant. And he had this whole smorgasbord. They were talking about, you know, the final weekend of the summer season. Go all out with your barbecues for Labor Day. And he's cooking up, you know, he's got brisket. He's got pulled pork. I'm watching, my mouth is watering as I'm watching on this TV. I'm supposed to be paying attention to my own stuff, and all I'm doing is watching this guy and his brisket. And when the segments were all over, I was talking to the producer, and I was able to have, they had this whole plate full of pulled pork. He's like, do you want? I know, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. I said, you bet your ass I want. So I had some nice pulled pork and brisket for breakfast this morning. Mwah! Mwah! I cannot say enough good things about this pulled pork. It was amazing. So I'm in a good mood right now, and we're going to get into a whole bunch of different things. Obviously, last night's AEW show, All Out. I will have a full review since I wasn't able to go live last night. We'll talk about that here in a little bit, among other things. Audible, you guys know the drill, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. That is the link to use. Many of you have been taking advantage of it throughout the year, and that offer is still being extended to you again in the month of September. If you sign up with that link, you can sample the service for 30 days. You get one free audiobook of your choosing. Now, I mentioned the Bob Holly book. I referred to the Bob Holly book, was it last week? Or the week before? I was talking about that staph infection story that he told about John Laurinaitis. You can read all about it. His book is on Audible. A lot of different choices. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster, and the Labor Day sale on ProWrestlingTees.com is still underway until Tuesday, September 3rd. You can get 20% off all shirts in our Sound Off store. Just use the code Labor Day. All one word. That's all you got to do. Labor Day. Use the code at checkout. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. And PayPal donations are always accessible on the Solomonster.com. If you'd like to make one, right-hand side of the page, you will see the button. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. Thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Killshot Keith Hart, the Maniac Medic W.S. Fletcher, the Anarchist Andrew Heller, Max the Axe Velado. Can't you tell some good brisket really puts you in a good mood? I mean, I think it would probably be bad if I incorporated that into my diet as breakfast on a regular basis, although I'm not against the idea. Not at all. But man, that was some good shit, as Vince McMahon would say. Max the Axe Velotto, who enjoyed this Labor Day weekend with his brother Kevin in Chicago for All Out. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the show as much as I did watching it at home. Speaking of which, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. I don't know if Willie was at the show last night or not. Willie, you'll have to let me know if you actually went to the pay-per-view or not. I'm curious now. The five-tool player, Adam Bartolo. By the way, Robinson Cano looked good in his rehab start for the Cyclones last night. He went 2-for-4 with an RBI. Just thought Adam would like to know. Steven Handyman Halastick, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Short Fuse Sean Simpson, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, the Mississippi Mauler, Cameron Tipton, Joe Carbomb Kazmarchak, celebrating his 30th birthday. Shout out from his buddy Steven. Steven Wise Guy Waisaki, wishing him a very happy birthday. And I also want to give a shout out to Carlos Kills You on iTunes for leaving a very nice review of the podcast. I got a lot of messages from people telling me that NXT TakeOver Cardiff may have been the show of the year, and the main event with Walter and Tyler Bate may well be the new match of the year. I am very much looking forward to going back and watching it, because the only match I've had time to watch so far from that Cardiff show is Cesaro's match against Ilya Dragunov. Cesaro made Dragunov in that match. I think Triple H said something similar when the show was over. I agree with him 100%. I was vaguely familiar with Dragunov. I don't watch NXT UK week to week. I've seen Dragunov a couple of times. I don't know him well enough, other than I know he's, you know, clearly a very, very good wrestler. But in one night, this one match, these two together in the ring, Cesaro helped make this guy. They had a great match. Cesaro just, he came off like a final boss here. Way more than he normally would on Raw. Just a totally different vibe here. It's no wonder that he's been lobbying Triple H to let him wrestle on the UK brand. Triple H says he's been nagging me for the longest time, and finally he gave in. He said, okay, fine. I'll let you do something on one of the shows. Hopefully it's not the last time. Hopefully it's not just a one-off. He can come back here and there. But 40 swings! He rotated Dragunov 40 times on a giant swing. I don't know how he didn't just vomit on the spot. I was sitting at home watching, and I almost lost my lunch. And I wasn't doing a damn thing, other than just sitting here watching it. He propelled Dragunov high into the air, caught him with an uppercut on the way down, followed that up with the neutralizer for the win. He went to leave, and he made it halfway up the aisle, and he turned around, he came back. He was kneeling down in the corner, he was teasing that he was going to attack Dragunov again, but instead, he attacked him with a handshake. Showed respect and then left. This was great stuff. This was great stuff. And I heard even better things about that NXT UK tag team title three-way. I had one person tell me it was the best tag team match all year. And there was at least one really good tag team match last night on some other show too. So I'll have to judge for myself. But I'm going to go back. I'm going to watch that. I'm going to watch the Walter match, which apparently went over 40 minutes, which is a long match. But given who was involved, I don't doubt that it was probably very snug. I'm guessing that match was a little on the snug side. So I will look forward to watching that later. But I can't really comment on it beyond that because I just haven't had time to watch it yet. What I did get to see was the AEW All Out show last night, which I thought was excellent. It was a long show. Too long. Ran just shy of midnight. Which is why I couldn't do a live stream, because I had to wake up to do the TV stuff in the morning. So my hope is that their future shows are shorter. I understand that they still haven't gotten television, so all of these shows up to this point, Double or Nothing, Fyter Fest, Fight for the Fallen, to a large extent, they've had to use these shows to condense a lot of different personalities, a lot of different tag teams, a lot of different people in, to give them exposure and to get people familiar with who they are. Once they get television, my hope is that these events, which they're not doing every month, hallelujah, they're not having monthly pay-per-views, even still, I don't see the need for these shows to go 4 hours. So hopefully they'll be shorter going forward. But I thought this was an excellent show. Twitter poll results so far. The poll is still open, by the way. At Solomonster is my handle if you want to go back and vote. It's not too late. So far, over 3,100 votes, 83% thumbs up, just 17% thumbs down, and overwhelmingly positive response to this show. The buy-in pre-show opened with the 21-woman casino battle royal. The women enter in blocks with one joker pick at the very end. That's the final entrant. First five entries were Leva Bates, Apache, Priscilla Kelly. For those wondering, yes, that's the tampon girl. Shalandra Royal and Nyla Rose. Up next, they had Penelope Ford, Shazam McKenzie, Sadie Gibbs. Sadie Gibbs is really good. Big Swole, and Britt Baker. And Nyla Rose played the role of just the dominant force here in this, even more than Awesome Kong when she came in. Nyla Rose was in from the very beginning. Obviously, she was there at the very end. And she played the role of the dominant ass kicker, the so-called force to be reckoned with here in this match. I guess that's going to be her role going forward. Next out, they had Tennille Dashwood, who just signed with Impact. So it looks like there may be a working relationship, maybe, possibly, between the two companies. There's at least an understanding, smartly, from the Impact side. They have no buzz. They have just nothing going on in terms of people talking about them. They could have the best wrestling on the planet. It doesn't matter. Nobody knows about it. Nobody can watch it. Nobody's paying attention. If I didn't even mention the fact just now that, you know, Tennille Dashwood signed with Impact, you know, how many of you who don't follow along with all the news sites and newsletters and stuff would have had any idea? Probably not very many of you. So I look at it as nothing but a positive. You know, if they want their talent to, you know, show up on some of these shows. I don't recall if the announcers made mention of the fact that she's from Impact Wrestling. That's something I would probably insist on. If, you know, if I'm someone from the Impact side, I don't know if they did that last night. And who knows, maybe it's a one-off, but I think it would be in their best interest to try to form some kind of working relationship with AEW, which is the hot hand right now at the moment and is going to have a lot more exposure than Impact does on TNT once they go to television in about a month. So she was out there, Ivelisse, Bea Priestley, Brandi Rhodes, and Awesome Kong. Britt Baker jumped Priestley in the aisle. Priestley is the one who concussed her in that match. They had it Fight for the Fallen, the tag match. We got a Nyla Rose, Awesome Kong exchange. Brandi had an exchange with Nyla Rose. I thought that in this exchange here, Brandi Rhodes looked good. She looked good in there for the limited stuff that she did, better than she looked at last time. Was it Fight for the Fallen against Allie? Speaking of which, out next was Allie, Nicole Savoy, Teal Piper, ODB with her trademark flask in hand, and Jazz. Haven't seen Jazz in a long time. She's now sporting a shaved head. Britt Baker eliminated Awesome Kong. Brandi got dumped out, although I didn't see by who. The Joker entrant, final entrant in the Battle Royal, was Mercedes Martinez, who got a great reaction. She got a superstar reaction coming out. I hope they've signed her, because if not, after that reaction, I don't know why they wouldn't. You know, WWE had their chance. She was in the Mae Young Classic. She had a few matches in NXT. And I think she might have been in both Mae Young Classics. And they didn't sign her. Or maybe they offered her something and for whatever reason she didn't accept. Who knows? Their loss. Their loss, I think, could be AEW's gain. But she's been doing this for a long time. I know she's probably older than a lot of the women that were in this match, although, you know, I don't know how old Jazz is in Awesome Kong. But she's not a rookie. I get that. But she's a great wrestler. And obviously she has a following. And if I'm AEW, I want to tap into that. Final four in the ring were Mercedes Martinez, Nyla Rose, Bea Priestley, and Britt Baker. Martinez was eliminated. People weren't overly happy about that. We got to see Britt Baker hit a Canadian Destroyer on Bea Priestley and then eliminate her. Priestley reached up, right? So she's already been eliminated, but she's a poor sport. Tell me if this doesn't remind you of somebody. So instead of leaving, she reaches up and she grabs a hold of Baker, I think her arm. And that allowed Nyla Rose to dump Britt Baker out of the ring. I can't believe it. They went with the 92 Rumble finish with Hogan and Sid. The only difference is Hogan at the time was a babyface who acted like a total bitch. At least here, Bea Priestley, she's a heel. And she's got beef with, you know, Britt Baker. And of course, it's natural that she would want to cost her the match. But in 92, Hogan, it was just a bad look for Hogan. People were happy when Hogan got dumped out of the ring. That's not what they would want you to believe. And they dubbed over the footage a few weeks later. But yeah, they went with the 92 Rumble finish here. And now, this was not nearly as good. Not even close. But at least points for trying. So Nyla Rose will now challenge to become the first ever AEW Women's Champion on the TNT debut show on October 2nd. I had Britt Baker winning. She was my pick, so I was this close, but close doesn't count. There was some sloppiness in here. But you know what? As battle royals go, when this thing was over, I thought it was entertaining. I didn't think it was a terrible battle royal. I didn't think it was a great battle royal. It was a good battle royal. That's my overall impression of this match. Because there have been some bad battle royals. And there have been some matches on some of these AEW pre-shows that I'm not a huge fan of. This, I didn't think this was bad. The other thing also is no Kylie Rae. Now, you go back to Double or Nothing and some of those early, I guess that would be the earliest of the AEW shows. Kylie Rae was a featured performer. She was the one who came out. She kind of had the Bayley gimmick where she's all happy-go-lucky and she, you know, got a big reaction from the crowd. And she's been an independent wrestler for a while, and she has just disappeared off the face of the earth. She has been MIA now for months, supposedly dealing with some kind of a personal matter. Nobody seems to know what that is because it's personal. Tony Khan was asked about her in the post-show media scrum when the event was over, and he said that not only was she not in the Battle Royal on the show, but she had asked for and has been granted her release from AEW. He said it was totally amicable, but she came to them and asked to be released, and they said okay, and they granted her release. I have no idea what's going on. I hope everything is okay. We then had House of Glory's own Private Party, Mark Ken and Isaiah Cassidy taking on Jack Evans and Angelico. Private Party, big time fan favorites here. Very cool to see them get that kind of reaction in what is really only their second appearance, I think, officially. I think they were in the crowd maybe at the last show, but this was really only their second time in the ring at an AEW event. And this was their coming out party in AEW. This was the biggest match of their career up to this point, save possibly for the match they just had a few weeks ago against the Young Bucks at the HOG show. But this was the biggest win of their career. They hit double poison Ranas towards the end, followed by their gin and juice finish, and Private Party picked up the win in what I thought overall was a pretty good match. I figured they would get the win here because they're wrestling the Bucks October 9th, that second week of AEW on TNT, in the tag team title tournament. So, you know, just stands to reason that you would want them to have at least one big win heading into that match against the Bucks. But that really, the finish itself here to this match was a hell of a finish. Evans and Angelico, they raised their arms when the match was over, and then they ambushed them, and the crowd chanted, "Party Poopers." Best way to describe this match, this was a sprint, but that's exactly what it should have been. This was the match that this crowd was looking for. They got the match that they wanted. Now, before we get into the pay-per-view here, I just want to mention they had Excalibur and Golden Boy doing the commentary for the pre-show. I thought they did a fine job. I enjoyed them. They didn't piss me off. They didn't do anything to insult my intelligence. So all the different things that I've become accustomed to the announcers doing in wrestling, I thought they were fine together. And I said, you know, Golden Boy last week, I said, is a good pickup for them. I thought he did a good job on that Fyter Fest show. He brings, you know, kind of a youthful, different voice to the broadcast. He's a fan, obviously. He knows what he's doing. He's got, you know, announcing experience. He doesn't sound awkward. And I thought the two of them gelled well. Then they brought Jim Ross in. And I thought Jim Ross was much improved from the last time that we saw him. He was, you know, making some mistakes. And he can come off sometimes like he's in a bad mood or he doesn't want to be there. I don't want to say that that's the case. That's unfair. I'm just saying that's how he comes across sometimes. I didn't get that sense last night. He seemed to gel better with Excalibur. He gelled fine, I thought, with Golden Boy. The X factor here was Alex Marvez, who they took out of the booth, which was a good move on their part. And instead, it was him and Excalibur hosting the post-show on YouTube when the show was over. I think that was a much better place for him to be. And I thought overall, the commentary, it wasn't perfect, but I thought overall it was a big improvement from last time. So now we get to the actual pay-per-view. We had a boy and his dinosaur, calling them the Jurassic Express. And Marco Stunt, that's Marco Stunt, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus, opening the pay-per-view against SCU, Daniels, Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky. Massive pop for really all three of the Jurassic Express, but in particular, Luchasaurus. Massive pop for the Luchasaurus, especially after Marco Stunt hit this Tope Suicida through Jungle Boy's legs out to the floor. And then Jungle Boy hit, I think it was a moonsault that he hit. So now Luchasaurus is in the ring, and he's like, man, I feel left out. You know what? I'm going to join in the party here. And this big SOB hits a dive of his own, like a cannonball dive out over the top rope, wipes everybody out, place comes unglued. This guy, I can't begin to tell you how over this guy was in this building last night. Finish came after Kazarian gave Luchasaurus a head scissors on the outside, and that sent him into his own partners. He wiped out Jungle Boy. He wiped out Marco Stunt. Inside, they give a spike tombstone to Jungle Boy and Marco Stunt, both, for the win. SCU picks up the win. SCU then shows respect to the baby faces, shakes their hands. Unlike the last match, where we saw Jack Evans and Angelico attack Private Party, there was no ambush here. That was different. I thought that was very unique. That the heel, and clearly SCU, I mean, they're positioned as, at least in this match, they were positioned as the heels. You would not have expected that from them when the match was over. I thought it was a nice, pleasant surprise that they didn't just attack them. It's kind of, all right, they're going to attack them. Of course they are. And then they didn't. So I thought that was kind of unique. I thought this was a hot opener, fun way to open the show. You got a man in a dinosaur mask who has the potential to be the biggest breakout star in all of wrestling. I'll be the first to say it's a pretty badass-looking mask. I said that when he was in Lucha Underground. So it helps to have a cool-looking mask, but he's still a guy in a dinosaur mask. But this guy has superstar written all over him. And I have to say this. I did say that the announcing was fine and Jim Ross and everything was much improved from last time. Jim Ross needs to stop calling Jungle Boy Jungle Jack. I understand Jack is his real name, Jack Perry. I get that. His name is not Jungle Jack. His name is not Jungle Jim. His name is Jungle Boy. He said Jungle Jack over and over again. It was getting on my nerves. Kenny Omega against the bastard Pac. And yes, I am calling him Pac, like I did last week, because the announcers were calling him Pac here. Because that's his name. I think Jim Ross called him Pac. His name is Pac. That's how they pronounce it. That's how I pronounce it. I had a few people, oh, it's Pac, Solomonster. No, it's not. It's Pac. So that's what I'm calling him. AEW took a negative in Jon Moxley's injury, his staph infection. They turned it into a positive. They replaced him with Pac. And this turned out to be the match that I was most looking forward to going into this show, and I thought these two delivered. I thought they had a hell of a match. Not a blowaway match, not a match of the year or anything like that, but an excellent match all the same, with what I thought was a shocking finish. It was shocking to me anyway. I did not predict that. I did not see that coming. Pac landed a moonsault onto Omega on the floor. He smacked his shin on top of the metal guardrail. Did not leave a whole lot of room on this show between the ring and these guardrails. And there were a few times during this match alone where these guys almost killed themselves on those guardrails. Thankfully, Pac had a thick shin pad on. Otherwise, I don't doubt for a second that he would have shattered his leg. Back inside, 450 by Pac, near fall. Omega goes for the one-winged angel. He tried that two or three different times here in this match. Couldn't hit it. On his last attempt, Pac countered the one-winged angel attempt into his brutalizer submission. It was almost like a crucifix. And looked pretty painful, You could see Omega fading and fading and fading. And finally, he passed out, blacked out. Referee called the match off. And by submission, Pac wins. I did not see that coming. And what it does is it vaults Pac into contention, maybe not right away, but it vaults him into contention for the AEW title. It sets up a comeback story now for Omega. Omega's got to fight his way back. He lost to Jericho at Double or Nothing. He did win against Shima at the last show, but now he suffers another big loss. And both losses were fair and square. You know, he lost to Jericho fair and square. He lost to Pac fair and square. No shenanigans, no interference, no nonsense, no weapons, no bullshit. So he now has to, you know, he has to come back. He has to fight his way back. I don't mind it at all, and it means Pac is signed for more than just one match. There were some questions still whether or not this was a one-shot. Did they call on him, you know, just to come in to replace Moxley, or what was the deal with him? It's pretty obvious now that he signed. I don't know if he signed long-term, but obviously he signed for more than just one match, which is great. We then had a Cracker Barrel clash. Darby Allin, Jimmy Havoc, and Joey Janela. Every bit as crazy as you would expect. Jimmy Havoc used a staple gun on himself at the start of the match. I mean, that says it all right there. Then they got Havoc outside the ring. They tied him down to a chair. They poured thumbtacks in his mouth, and they duct taped his mouth shut. Janela hit an Emerald Frozen to Darby Allin on the ring apron. Havoc broke free, grabbed a piece of paper. He started giving Janela paper cuts with it. You know what? That spot works for me. And I understand, again, it's maybe one of those things that some people will look at it and go, oh, it exposes the business. Oh, what are these guys doing? Jim Cornette, he's going to pitch a fit. Jim Cornette gives a shit. I get that. But if you've ever had a paper cut before, that shit sucks. Okay? Paper cuts suck. That shit hurts. Never doubt the pain of a paper cut. When he shredded that paper across his mouth, I winced. So it worked on me. Janela hit a running sunset flip off the apron on Darby Allin, put him through a table on the floor. Janela then did a dive on the opposite side of the ring, out to the floor, on nobody at all. Nobody was there. I don't know if maybe Havoc moved out of the way. I have to think Jimmy Havoc was there and he moved. I couldn't see it, though. It just looked like he decided to dive for the sake of diving. And he hit the metal ramp. They had an actual Cracker Barrel. Actually, he had two of them. They had one Cracker Barrel at the top of the ramp. They had one Cracker Barrel at the bottom of the ramp. And those came into play. They had a plate of biscuits or cornbread. Was it cornbread? I'm sorry. I'm still thinking of the brisket and the pulled pork at NBC this morning. I still got that on my brain. Now you throw in biscuits and cornbread, you got a full meal. When's Thanksgiving? I can't wait. So they had this plate of food, whatever it was. It was making me hungry. He smashed it in Janela's face. Janela, by the way, at one point, he was searching for toys under the ring to play with. And he pulled out a tennis racket. And then he kind of looked at it, and he's like, ugh, and he chucked it aside. Like, who would ever use a tennis racket as a weapon? That is his now regular shot at Jim Cornette. He, you know, a lot of these guys will say, oh, you know, Cornette, he's a wrestler. And I'm not giving my opinion one way or the other. Cornette is a very polarizing figure. Every time there's some new controversy, I don't get involved because honestly, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't give a shit. I am not so moved to care enough to comment on any of this stuff. But I will say this, you have these wrestlers who say he's a wrestling relic. He shouldn't be taken seriously. Let's not give him any oxygen or the time of day. He's yesterday's news. And yet, they can't stop talking about this guy. They can't stop referring to him. He's not saying a word about them. I doubt he was watching this show. But boy, they love to take shots and bring him up every chance they get. Fascinating how that works. Darby Allin introduced a skateboard, the back of which was littered in thumbtacks. So that was different. Darby Allin, who seems to have a death wish, he grabbed one of the barrels, takes the barrel up to the top rope with him. He positions the barrel behind him. Now, before this, he had laid Jimmy Havoc across the ring steps. So you got to picture this. Jimmy Havoc is laying across the ring steps. Darby Allin climbs up top. He's got this barrel. He places the barrel behind him. He does a truss dive backwards. Havoc moves, and the barrel explodes on impact. And the impact on those steps did not look very fun for Darby Allin. In fact, they zoomed in on his back when he was laying there, and his back was all purple, black and blue. But this guy has a death wish. You look at the coffin drop and all the stuff this guy puts his body through, you would think he enjoys it. I think it was Golden Boy who said on commentary this match was making him physically uncomfortable. Not as much as these three guys, I'm sure. Havoc superplexed Janela off the top rope for what looked like it was supposed to be the finish, with Janela crashing through the other barrel that they brought into the ring, but only his foot caught the barrel, and so Havoc hit a lariat, and in doing so, he knocked Janela down through the barrel, finally pinned him. I don't know what to say about this, other than these men are insane. And it was exactly the kind of match this crowd wanted to see. And they gave them what they wanted. I did not expect Jimmy Havoc to walk away with the win. I had predicted Janela. And if I had to pick a number two choice, it would have been Darby Allin. And, you know, Havoc would have been at the bottom of the list. But there you go. Jimmy Havoc picks up the win. I guess he's got to win at some point, right? You got to throw Jimmy Havoc a bone every now and then. Maybe this was their way of just throwing him a win. But this match was pretty crazy. Not a huge fan of all the hardcore stuff, but this was entertaining for what it was supposed to be. Then we have the Dark Order against the Best Friends. Chucky T and Trent Barreto, winner gets a bye in the AEW Tag Team Title Tournament. I said going in, the whole bye thing, the whole concept of getting a bye into the next round, it would make sense for the heel team to win the match and get the bye, and that's exactly what happened. I cannot look at Evil Uno in that outfit that he wears without thinking of one of those hostile movies. And it just makes me sick. It just makes me sick. I mean, you think back to like the Oddities in the Attitude Era. I guess in a way, Golga had a similar... Well, the mask at least. The mask was similar. I mean, Golga at least, he looked semi-normal. He had the Eric Cartman doll that he carried with him everywhere. He wore a t-shirt and I think sweatpants. That wasn't as bad. I look at this Evil Uno guy and he just creeps me the fuck out. I mean, maybe that's the point. I don't know, but he creeps me out, like, but in a bad way. Like, I don't want to watch this guy. Dark Order won with the fatality to get the bye. Weakest match on the main card up to this point. My problem with the Dark Order, they're actually very good wrestlers. It's not just the gimmick. They can wrestle. They can work. Absolutely. But there's absolutely nothing menacing about them whatsoever. They're supposed to be this dark team. You're supposed to be afraid of them. They're evil. They're this, they're that. There is not a single thing about these guys that screams menacing or scary whatsoever. That gimmick does not work. They would be better served to ditch it and just start over again. I keep hearing Super Smash Brothers. Oh, Solomonster, I can't believe you've never heard of the Super Smash Brothers in you know, the other promotions they were in previously. No, I haven't. I keep hearing all these wonderful things about the Super Smash Brothers. I haven't seen it so far. They can wrestle, but this gimmick sucks. I am not impressed by what I have seen. And for the people who did know of their work before this, who praise it and say, oh, well, you know what? Then I guess AEW is not doing right by these guys. Because it didn't seem like the crowd was much into it either. Didn't seem like I was the only one not into this. They were carrying Beretta's carcass to the back when the lights went out. When they came back on in the ring was Orange Cassidy. Standing in the ring with his hands in his pockets, he did a tope through the ropes. One of about 24 that we saw on this show. In fact, Jim Ross, the lead play-by-play announcer for this promotion, I think it was during the main event, or one of the main events, actually made a comment. He didn't make the comment to himself off camera on his podcast. He just blurted out, you know, how many of these tope suicidas we've had on this show. And he's not wrong, but I don't know that that's the sort of thing you want to point out while the show is in progress. Orange Cassidy left with the Best Friends. In fact, the Best Friends did a group hug in the ring with Cassidy in the middle. And then they all left together. So it looks like he may be one of the Best Friends now. I guess he's the lazy friend. He's the friend who doesn't want to get a job, but he just wants to sit at home and mooch off his roommate. We had Riho, all 98 pounds of her, against Hikaru Shida, With the winner meeting Nyla Rose on October 2nd on TNT to crown the first ever AEW Women's Champion, Sheeta worked over Riho's back, bent her in half, put her in a deep Boston crab. Riho battled back, landed a double foot stomp off the top rope onto Sheeta on the apron. She may only be 98 pounds, but that still probably doesn't feel too good. Riho picks up the win with a head scissors into a pin on Sheeta. Not my favorite match on the card. It was a good match, not overly exciting, but you know, well worked. It was fine for what it was, but by no means my favorite match. It does create an interesting dynamic now for that championship match October 2nd. You're going to have Riho in there, who's very small and very light, against the much larger Nyla Rose. I have to think that Nyla Rose is walking away the first ever women's champion in AEW. I would be kind of shocked if she didn't at this point. We then had Cody and Sean Spears in a grudge match. Say what you want about Cody. I know he's turned into, at least on social media, it seems like he's turned into this very polarizing figure. Some people like the guy, some people absolutely hate his guts. You get a lot of divided opinion about Cody. He has his fans, he has his detractors. I will say that Cody has been involved in some really great matches that have gotten a ton of heat, and this was no different. In fact, this was my favorite match of the night, even more than the ladder match, and probably a little bit more even than Omega and Pac. Cody, Brandy, DDP, MJF all came out wearing Star Wars-themed outfits. We had MJF out there with his scarf over his Star Trek attire. Cody came out first. Brandy came out separately with DDP, MJF, and Cody and Brandy's dog, Pharaoh. Pharaoh the dog looked scared to death to be walking out there because pyro was being set off as they're trying to bring this dog out onto the stage. You got concussions, you've got pyro going off, and this dog wanted to be anywhere but on that stage. I felt bad for the dog. And then I saw a lot of people felt the same way. There are a lot of people who were angry at Cody for even thinking it would be a good idea to bring the dog out there. Now, he's done this before. But with the pyro, I mean, I would imagine you put any animal out there. Dog, cat, pig, you know, whatever. Zebra. They're probably not going to like it very much if you set off a shitload of pyro, you know, a few feet in front of them. Now, when the show was over, Tony Khan said that he did not want that to happen again. And he said that Brandy was not happy with her husband after the show was over. So he's got to answer to her as far as that goes. But that was a really stupid thing to do. And hopefully we will not see Pharaoh the dog out anymore in the arena. You know, he's a cute dog. He is. He's a cute dog. And I know Cody's always posting photos and video of him on social media. That's great. That's great. He doesn't have to be out there in the building. Tully Blanchard was in Sean Spears' corner while Cody chose to go with MJF to be in his. They were heavily foreshadowing an MJF turn on Cody, which did not happen, but it's coming. Tully got a lot more physical in this match than I expected that he would, all things considered. I mean, you compare him to some of his brethren. He's moving around pretty well for a guy in his 60s. Spears gave Cody a nasty running DVD on the floor. Cody eventually hit the crossroads, but Tully distracted Earl Hebner. MJF and Tully Blanchard got into it in the ring. Tully grabbed him. I think he grabbed him by the neck. Started choking him. Sean Spears took out MJF. Outside the ring, Tully is stomping on MJF. When who should walk down to the ring but Double A, Arn Anderson. Now, I was hoping he would be in Cody's corner and he would turn on Cody because the Horsemen have always hated the Rhodes family. Why break with tradition? But this was the next best thing. I was hoping we would see Arn. We got Arn. Arn rolled into the ring. He hit his patented spine buster on Sean Spears. Still a beauty after all these years. Tully looked flabbergasted. He couldn't believe what his former tag team partner had done, his former fellow horseman had done. And as Arn walked back up the ramp through the tunnel to leave, Tully, with this shocked look on his face, follows suit and just walks to the back through the other tunnel. He just leaves. No explanation for you. Inexplicably walks to the back, never to be seen again. Why would he do this? That made no sense. He left his man high and dry. Cody teased a chair shot of his own on Spears. Instead, he tossed the chair to Shawn Spears, who caught it, and he hit the disaster kick, knocked the chair back into his face. Somehow, this was not a disqualification. I didn't say everything in this match made sense. I just said that overall, I liked it more than most of the other matches. That doesn't mean that everything made sense, because it didn't. And that was one of those parts that didn't make a whole lot of sense. He then hit the crossroads and picked up the win. When the match was over, in the back, Cody made it very clear. He was doing an interview, and he said that this issue with Shawn Spears, as far as he's concerned, is over. That's it. It's done. They're moving on to other opponents. Maybe Shawn Spears doesn't feel the same way, and in storyline, he ends up attacking Cody, and it continues. But boy, you know, him beating him straight up like this sure felt like this issue was over. That the whole point of this was just to establish Shawn Spears as a heel on the roster, put him with Tully. Hopefully Tully sticks with him for a while, because I have a feeling he's going to need him. And he can move on to other opponents. But Cody beat him. Cody got his revenge for the chair shot. There's nothing left. There's no need for this to continue on after this. And that surprised me, because I figured they would want to carry this on a little bit longer. But they blew it off. So really, he's right. There's no reason to keep this thing going at this point. But when the match was over, MJF got into the ring. And he reached down, and he picked up a chair. He picked up the chair that was in the ring. And he started to very subtly tease that he might hit Cody with the chair. When Cody turned around, he chucked it aside. He raised Cody's arm. I thought this was a really fun match. Not everything made sense, but it was a really fun match. I enjoyed the cameo by Arn Anderson. Interesting to point out, Cody was the only member of the Elite crew that won a match last night. The Bucks lost. Hangman lost, Omega lost, and Cody won. And there's reason for him to win. There's a reason for this. It's building to something. And it has to do with MJF, and I'll talk about that at the end of the review when I get there. We had the Lucha Bros, Pentagon and Phoenix. Phoenix looked pretty good for that leg injury he suffered on that indie show about a week ago. They took on the Young Bucks in a ladder match for the AAA Tag Team titles. Too many crazy things to recap here. I'll name a few. I mean, there was a running dive by Nick Jackson under the ladder and through the ropes out onto Pentagon. Pentagon hit a destroyer to Matt Jackson off a ladder through a table. They showed four replays of this, which is notable because the way, you know, AEW does things a lot like WCW used to, where they'll wait until the end of the match and then they'll show you highlights from the match, which I kind of like, because you don't get the constant interruptions like you do on a WWE show, where they show you, if somebody picks their nose in the ring, they'll show you five replays of it from five different angles and slow-mo. It's not necessary. But this was such a crazy move. We got instant replay from four different angles. Four times they replayed this friggin' move. How Matt Jackson didn't kill himself, I have no idea. How all four of these guys didn't kill themselves, I'll never know. We had Matt setting Phoenix up for a tombstone. Now we're skipping ahead towards the end. Matt has Phoenix up for a tombstone. Nick is on the ladder. Now Nick is looking at this. He's got two choices. His brother wants him to hit, I guess, a Meltzer driver. He wants him to hit a move so they can kill Pentagon, or rather kill Phoenix. But he looks up and he sees the titles. So what does he do? Do you hit the move and show off, or do you climb up and retrieve the titles? So as he took time to contemplate this great life decision, Pentagon superkicked Matt, and then he tipped the ladder over, sent Nick crashing through one of the two tables that had been set up outside the ring. His feet caught the top rope on the way down. And as it was, it looked like he cut his hand. His hand or his wrist was all bloody. That could have been a lot worse. That was very dangerous. I mean, he caught his feet in such a way that had he landed a little bit differently, it could have been curtains for him. So all things considered, he got off easy on that move. As Matt is fighting with Pentagon now on the ladder, he rips off Pentagon's mask to massive boos. This is what Jon Moxley did. I think it was at that, was it Northeast Wrestling or some independent wrestling show a few weeks ago, the last indie match that Moxley had. He insisted on wrestling Pentagon. He wanted to keep the match and not cancel it, so he really didn't take too many bumps on his elbow. But I think in that match that the two of them had, he did the same thing, where he yanked off Pentagon's mask. So here he yanks off the mask. Instant boos for Matt Jackson, because you don't do that. You don't disrespect a luchador by ripping off their mask. Pentagon immediately covers his face with his hands. Phoenix knocks the ladder over. Matt takes a nasty spill. Once Pentagon gets his mask back on, Matt Jackson was in for some pain in the form of a package pile driver through a ladder bridge on the outside. The ladder did not break. So now you have Matt dead, Nick is dying, and the Lucha Bros finally climb up and they grab the tag team titles to retain. This was a total car crash. One of those matches you can't take your eyes off of because you're going to miss five different things. But that also doesn't make it the best match on the entire show. You know, I don't think it was. People see a match like this and you know, they become subject to a lot of hyperbole. Oh my God, it's the greatest thing I ever saw. It's the greatest this, it's the greatest that. It's a great match, but it wasn't the best match of the night. Still a hell of a battle. After the match was over, Bill Clinton and JFK attacked the Lucha Bros. What a match that's going to be. Or should I say two men in Bill Clinton and JFK masks. If JFK attacked the Lucha Bros last night, then that's a much bigger news story. That's a much bigger news story than it is for this one podcast. So they get attacked, and when they pull the masks off, they reveal themselves as Santana and Ortiz. LAX has made their choice, and their choice is AEW. Although it'll have to be under a different name, I believe, because Impact owns the LAX name. Yes, Impact does now allow its talent to take their names with them, like EC3 did. A lot good it did him. Let me say this, before I even go on about EC3 and the sad sack that he has become, and I feel bad for the guy. You know, EC3 came into NXT with all this fanfare, and he was over. He was very popular, and I remember him being part of that six-man matchup that they had to crown the first ever North American champion, and things looked promising for EC3. And then he got called down to the main roster, and it has been all downhill since then. And he was doing a podcast this past week with Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins. They recorded it. The video is up. I don't even know where I watched the video. It might have been their own personal YouTube channel, I guess. Wherever it was. I'm watching them. They're sitting in a room at a table talking about toys and stuff. And they show EC3 his first official WWE action figure. And the EC3 action figure, I guess, comes with a microphone in its hand. And there were a few times during this podcast where EC3 took little subtle, not so subtle pot shots at his treatment so far in WWE. So he sees the action figure with the mic in his hand and he goes, oh, look, I got a microphone in my hand. I wish I had a microphone in my hand in real life, too. You could tell this guy is just, you know, miserable in terms of he knows that he could be doing better and he wishes he could do more. Who knows? Maybe he likes his job enough to not raise a stink. He's got friends there. He's living the life. He came across here like a guy who on the inside is dying a little bit each day that goes by. And I feel bad for the guy. Because who knows what, you know, his limit could have been. I'm not saying he would have been the next Universal Champion. But certainly he could be doing a lot better than he is now. He could have been the MJF of WWE. That's the role that I would have envisioned for him as a heel, not as a babyface. He could have been the closest thing to an MJF type character in WWE. And I think he could have done well for himself. If nothing else, he could have been a great Intercontinental Champion, US Champion, maybe competing for a world title one day. And to see what they've done or not done with him is just a fucking disgrace. And now you see it coming through when he does some of these interviews and you can see how much it just eats him up inside. So, anyway, why did I even mention EC3? Now I'm trying to remember what I... Oh, right. So, EC3 got to take the name with him. Because Impact, I think last year, had instituted this new rule, which is very cool of them to do, that allows their talent to take their gimmick, their name, their character with them. Wherever they go. LAX is probably the exception to that rule, because LAX does not belong to Santana and Ortiz. They inherited the LAX name from Conan and Homicide and Hernandez many years ago, back to the TNA days. So that really is a TNA gimmick. So I don't believe they're able to use the LAX name. They'll have to come up with a new name. But they are now in AEW. And I look at this and I say, you know, with their arrival, I dare say, AEW already has, they haven't even debuted on TV yet, and they already have the best tag team division in all of wrestling at the moment. They have the Young Bucks, the Lucha Bros, LAX, Luchasaurus, and Jungle Boy. And if I'm them, they've got to be in the running for winning that tag team title tournament. I mean, they may be the most overact in that entire company right now. You've got SCU, you've got Private Party, you've got Jack Evans and Angelico. You throw in the Best Friends, you throw in the Dark Order. Not that I'm a huge fan of the gimmick, but they're a good team. And we still don't know who Chris Jericho's partners are going to be on that first TNT show in that six-man tag. It may be a new tag team, or it could be two singles wrestlers. We don't know. But right now, they've got the tag team division to beat, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not saying I'm not shitting all over WWE. They have no good teams. They've got the Usos. They've got the Revival. Even the New Day. I know a lot of people are tired of the New Day, but they're a good team. They've got some good teams in WWE. But their tag team division right now is just all over the place. I think, you know, it says it all that the fact that Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman are the current tag team champions on Monday Night Raw. And are likely to be beaten by the new makeshift team of Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode. And you're going to sit there and try to convince me, as one guy tried to do on Twitter, that WWE has the best tag team division. Sit your ass down. We're not counting NXT teams right now. I think even if you did count NXT teams, I'm not taking anything away from O'Reilly and Fish. But right now, AEW can lay claim to having the strongest tag team division in all of wrestling. You can debate me on that if you want to. You can fight me on that. I don't give a shit. You want to fight me on it? How about people say fight me when they put their opinions online? Fight me. I don't give a shit if you fight me or not. You're not going to change my mind. What do you think? You're going to change my mind? I'm making a statement. You're not going to change my mind. So, tag team wrestling is alive and well in AEW. That's a positive thing. Everybody should be happy. If you're a fan of tag team wrestling, give AEW a shot. Because right now, they have put together, so far, one hell of a tag team division. And then we had the main event. To crown the first ever AEW World Champion Chris Jericho against Hangman Adam Page. Page rode a horse out for his entrance. Thankfully, no pyro to spook the horse. But I guess him riding the horse out, you know, that's part of all that cowboy shit that he's always talking about. Early in the match, Jericho countered a shooting star press by Page off the apron with the knees. So Page hits the shooting star off the apron. Jericho gets the knees up. That was in the first just few minutes of the match. Later on, Jericho locked on the walls. Page fought his way out of it. He waffled Jericho with a discus punch. Jericho retreated to the floor. It opened him up above the eye. Either that or he bladed. I think he might have bladed. Either way, he got a lot of color all over his face. Finish came after Jericho hit a code breaker for a near fall. Hangman hit the dead eye, which is the reverse tombstone, also for a near fall. Buckshot Lariat followed for another near fall, and then, out of nowhere, Jericho hits the Judas Effect, which is his new reverse kind of back elbow finish. Knocked out Page and pinned him 1-2-3 to become the first ever AEW champion. You gotta love it. Kicked out of Hangman's finish, and then pinned him with an elbow. God bless Chris Jericho. Kicked out of this guy's finish and just beat him clean with an elbow. Can you imagine if that was anyone else? If that was any other veteran in his spot? If Triple H did that to somebody? Oh my God. And I probably would be the first one to chime in on the uproar, I will admit. But you know what? As far as Jericho winning, though, it was the right call. I said months ago, I would have put the title on Chris Jericho here. And that's exactly what they did. And they not only did they put the title on Chris Jericho, but they put the title on him clean. No controversy, no interference, no weapons. He hit his finish, and he pinned him. And Paige's time will come, but it's too soon. It just felt too soon to put the championship on him. Jericho is a known commodity. He's a great heel. There's a lot of different people you could put up against him now. It opens up a lot of different avenues as far as potential opponents and who you transition that title to next. I thought these two had a really good match. I know the finish fell flat for a lot of people. It came out of nowhere. I was not expecting him to just hit the elbow and pin him 1-2-3. But I thought this was a really good match. In fact, I think this was probably my... Well, let's see here. I like the Cody match, and I would say number two... it's tough. I think I would go with this match as number two. I might go with this match as number two. But Omega and Pac, that was really good also. I might go with that number three. It's tough. It's close between those two. AEW also announced their next pay-per-view titled Full Gear, coming up on Saturday, November 9th from the Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore, Maryland, the same building that WWE runs tomorrow night from Monday Night Raw. And I look at that Full Gear show, and I was thinking, okay, what are the top matches going to be for this show? Obviously, nothing has been officially announced yet. I see it the way that I'm guessing a lot of you probably see it as far as what the top three matches are going to be on that show. I look at it as Pac against Hangman Page. That was the match that was supposed to happen back at Double or Nothing, and Pac couldn't show, didn't show, whatever. Not only that, but Pac threw a water bottle, apparently. He chucked a water bottle at Hangman's head backstage after the show last night. So that seems like that's the next match. Omega and Moxley, if we assume by November Moxley is going to be good to go, that's the match we should have had last night. They can do it at the next pay-per-view. And the main event for the championship, it would seem to me, and this goes to what I was saying earlier when I was talking about Cody and MJF, Cody keeps winning. And Cody was the only member of the Elite to win last night, got a big win, and now Chris Jericho is the champion. It would seem that they're setting up for Chris Jericho defending the title, probably at this show, against Cody. And that, I would expect, is the place where MJF finally turns on Cody. It's a very weird dynamic having MJF, who is a tremendous heel. He's so good at what he does. I love just everything about the guy. He barely ever breaks character, and he just goes out of his way to make people hate his guts, like a classic heel would. He can talk. He's great. But this friendship that he has with Cody, who's supposed to be a babyface and comes out and gets a babyface reaction, but he picks MJF to be in his corner, it's very strange. And I have to think that it's all leading somewhere. They certainly were teasing it a lot last night. I think it leads to Cody getting a championship match, and Cody is going to lose, but he's going to finally lose because MJF fucks him out of the title. And Jericho retains. So that's how I see things turning at this next pay-per-view. That's how I see the top of the card for this Full Gear show. I'm not sure where they got that name from, Full Gear. That's a very strange name for a pay-per-view. It's more like a description for like a wrestler. If you're going to send the guy out, go change into Full Gear. I don't know. Just a strange name. The name is not important. Hopefully they'll be able to put together a card that, on paper, looks good and gets people to plop down $50, because that's what I had to do last night. You know, you kind of forget that you watch Fyter Fest and you watch Fight for the Fallen, which I did on the BR Live app or website, and those shows were free. You know, I mean, I paid to go to Double or Nothing. I made a whole Vegas weekend out of it. But the next two shows I watched and didn't have to pay anything because they were free. And now it's like, oh, I got to pay $50. It's been a long time that I've paid for a pay-per-view. You get so used to the WWE Network if you're a subscriber. And all of these shows that WWE does, there's so many of them now. You don't really, I mean, you're paying for it, but you're not really paying for it. It's not like the old days where you'd have to call the cable company or whip out the credit card. $50 or $34.95 or whatever it would be. And I realize, like, I'm watching this and I'm like, huh. You know, I've had subscriptions to New Japan World and the WWE Network, and you get so accustomed to that. I had to stop myself for a second and say, am I really doing this? Am I spending $50 on this show? And I did. And I thought I got my money's worth. When it was over, it was very long, but I was entertained. And on the whole, I thought that this show delivered. And based on the poll results so far, 83-17, I mean, clearly I'm not alone in that opinion. So I thought it was a good effort last night. And I am looking forward to the October 2nd launch. That's going to be a pivotal day in wrestling history. It's going to be the start of something either that we're going to look back on a year from now and say, oh, what might have been? What a flop that was. Or we're going to look back and say that was the day that people, you know, were able to finally, you know, tune into a real alternative. And we have a real number two now in this country as far as pro wrestling is concerned. It's going to be a while before we find out the answer to that question, but, you know, everybody, every wrestling fan, whether you are going to watch AEW or not, should be hoping for the best. I at least hope that they do well enough to, you know, be a healthy, viable alternative for anybody who doesn't like what they're seeing on Monday nights. And they can tune in on Wednesdays and they can see a different kind of product and it can flourish and do well. And maybe we can get back to a point where guys don't feel as though they have to just go to WWE. They can go to an AEW, and if they get television time and if they get built up and after a few years they don't want to be in AEW anymore and they have aspirations to go somewhere else, you can have a bidding war between the two companies. You could have people jumping ship from one company to the other. I mean, WWE doesn't really let people go anymore. But as contracts come due and stuff, you know, the next thing is the revival. It's the revival. You know, are they going to re-sign with WWE or are they going to leave? Are they going to be, can you add their name to the tag team division in AEW? You don't think they'd love to get in there with some of those teams I rattled off earlier and mix it up with them? Instead of wrestling the same faces every single week? But there's a long way to go before their contracts are over next year. So who's to say if they're going to stay, are they going to go? And there could be names far bigger than Dash and Dawson whose contracts come due, and it can make for some very interesting backstage news and notes when it comes to contracts and people jumping ship and all that kind of stuff that we really haven't seen for a very long time. So that's why when I say you don't have to watch AEW if you don't want to, you know, not everybody has to be an AEW fan, but everybody should be rooting for success. Because their success is going to rub off on a whole bunch of other people. So it's exciting. It's exciting to see that we could be close to something like that again. Monday Night Raw was live from New Orleans, Louisiana. Twitter poll had just shy of 3,000 votes. So a lower vote total than normal, but only 16% thumbs up, 24% thumbs down, 60% did not watch. They opened the show with an in-ring promo with Sasha Banks. And I knew this because Michael Cole told me that it was boss time. She actually brought up the reports that she pitched a fit backstage at WrestleMania and laid on the floor and was crying, and she said it was all true. That was said to be a Paul Heyman call, make it feel more real. Then she said that she was angry that Becky Lynch got the main event spot at WrestleMania while she was stuck wrestling for women's tag team titles that she did not care about. She didn't care about the women's tag team titles. Really? Could have fooled me. They wouldn't shut up about them for months. Of course she didn't care about them, because she knows what the rest of us already know. They are a dead end for your career. They didn't have to be, but that's exactly what they've become. She said that she's the standard of the women's division. Natty ran down her arm, looked totally fine to me. And the two of them brawl. This led to a match later in the show where Sasha won with the bank statement. After the match was over, she put her in the submission again. And as she walked up the ramp, she flashed a sinister smile. I like the Sasha Banks stuff this week. But she got almost no heat for her promo. You know, if people cared enough about Natty, considering how hard in she's gone on Natty the last few weeks, they might have been angrier at Sasha for what she did to her, but the people just didn't really, seem to care that much. I find the Street Profits absolutely insufferable on this show every week. I don't know what it is. I like them on NXT. I don't feel the same way about them on NXT. But on Raw, I just want to change the channel when they come on my TV, or at least hit the mute button. So, welcome to the main roster, boys. We got two good King of the Ring matches on this show. Actually, one good one and another excellent one. The excellent one was between Drew McIntyre and Ricochet. And my bracket has just been... I mean, my bracket was kind of semi-busted last week, and now my bracket has just been thoroughly destroyed. Which is great. Which is great. In a way, because that means it's not such a predictable tournament. Of course, some of the outcomes will make you scratch your head, but... my pick was bounced right out of the first round, the moment that Drew McIntyre walked out for his match, and he decided to go walk over to the throne and sit down on the throne. That was it. I knew he was toast. The moment he did that, Baron Corbin did the same thing after his match, and he's toast too. He's not winning. But as soon as Drew sat down and grabbed that scepter, I said, shit. But this was just a tremendous match, and they gave it time, too. Ricochet won with the 630. Yeah, I was really surprised to see them eliminate Drew in the first round. Speaking of falling from grace, and we'll talk here now about the other King of the Ring match. What has happened to The Miz? What has happened to The Miz? He had real momentum as a babyface, and that Shane McMahon feud absolutely killed this guy dead. Just killed him. Before the match, he got on the mic, and The Miz is running down his accomplishments, and he says, you know, people ask him all the time what he wants. By the way, I'll bet $1 million, absolutely no one has asked him that question. But he says, what I want is to be king. Yeah, and I still want that fucking pony, but I haven't gotten that yet either. Take a seat. Corbin, at least, is not dressed like an Applebee's maitre d' anymore. He won with the End of Days and then took a load off on the throne, not to be confused with pinching a loaf on the throne. That would just be disrespectful. So all hail King Corbin, he said. I will lead the mutiny if that happens, which I don't think it will. When I get to my SmackDown review, I'll take a look at how the bracket is shaping up and try to predict where I think things are headed because, you know, I did such a great job the first time. So let's do it again. Let's make some predictions. We had a tag team turmoil gauntlet match to determine the number one contenders for the Raw tag team titles. The Viking Raider Experience beat the B team. And then they went to a double DQ with Anderson and Gallows when the referee threw the match out because he lost control. This sucked. This sucked. And the crowd let him know it. Then we got a brand new team. The team of Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode. Now, per the Observer, Paul Heyman is a big fan of Bobby Roode, and he realizes that he's been treated like a nobody for a very long time, and they have to rehab him, which is why he picked up a whole bunch of pinfalls for his team here in this match. When McIntyre was called back, if you remember, Drew McIntyre, he was in NXT, and he got called back to the main roster after being away for a few years. When they called him up, they put him with Dolph Ziggler as a means to help him get over. So at first he was sort of the Diesel to Ziggler, Shawn Michaels, and then they became tag team partners. I think they became tag team champions. But it was clearly intended as a way less to get Dolph Ziggler over in a higher position and more to give some credibility to McIntyre and get him on TV. And it worked to the extent that he was in some of the main segments on the show for quite a while. They were feuding with Roman Reigns. And anyway, that's what they did with Drew. And it looks like they're now going to do the same thing with Roode, although I doubt they're going to be positioned as high up as Ziggler and McIntyre were. But they're going to do the same thing here with Roode to help Bobby Roode get over. And, you know, Roode was an entertaining heel in NXT. I was a big fan of his work. I was a big fan of his work with the Dirty Heels stuff with him and Austin Aries and Impact. That was during a period where I was watching Impact every week. And when he went heel and became the champion, and I was a Bobby Roode fan. So when he signed with NXT and came in and was pretty much doing the same kind of character, I was very excited and very happy to see it. And then they called him up to the main roster. And from day one, when he got called up to SmackDown, I could never understand why he was positioned, basically, as a babyface. He was miscast from day one. And he has been ever since. So if this is their way of trying to fix that, then I say let's give it time. And let's see if it works. Let's see how much power Paul Heyman really does have. Let's see how much of a magician Paul Heyman really can be. They beat Lince Dorado and Grand Metalik. They beat The Revival. Bobby Roode pinned Scott Dawson. Roode gave him a wedgie in the course of giving him the glorious DDT. There's nothing glorious about this. They gave him a wedgie, and all I'll say is Scott Dawson needs to transition to pants from now on. Although I'm not very optimistic about that because now he's linked up with Randy Orton and he never wears pants. Next up, Ziggler and Rude beat Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. My God, you know, it's funny. I think back to this match now. This match was never ending. And finally, they beat Heavy Machinery after a glorious DDT to Tucker for the win. This means that at Clash of Champions, Dolph Ziggler will once again be challenging for a championship, this time the Raw Tag Team titles, and probably winning them, since I don't see Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman making it to the main event that night still as the Tag Team champions. And yes, this also means that Strowman and the man's man will be pulling double duty on that pay-per-view. By the way, speaking of the man's man, Seth Rollins was number one. He was ranked number one wrestler in the world this year in the PWI 500. I would tweet him congratulations, but, well, you know how that goes. Cesaro and Cedric Alexander had a really good match also on this show. I had it just a shade or two below Drew and Ricochet, but easily the second best thing of the entire night. Cesaro worked over Cedric's leg, which is going to be a story, I would think, heading into the quarterfinals of this tournament and the match that Cedric is going to be having with Baron Corbin. And that could be their out, you know, as far as beating Cedric, who's gotten a push lately. That could be their out as far as getting him out of the tournament without making him look weak in defeat. Cedric did win. He won here with the lumbar check. He continues to be pushed hard. And he must have the Heyman blessing, I guess, because this is a push unlike any that he has ever gotten in all the time he has been in WWE. And again, I'm happy to see it. I'm happy to see people getting opportunities who were not getting them before. And this is part of what this new face of Raw should look like. There's got to be some new faces in there, whether they're being called up, whether they're new in that they've been around for a while, but they haven't really been pushed or focused on. So people like Bobby Roode might get an opportunity now. Is it going to work? Are people going to take to him? I don't know. Maybe not. But the guy at least deserves to have a shot. Cedric Alexander, talented guy. And I said this a long time ago when I was talking about the 205 Live crew, and I was singling out certain people who I thought could be stars above and beyond that division, who should be in the ring mixing it up with the heavyweights. And I name-dropped people like Ali and Buddy Murphy and Cedric Alexander, and now we're seeing people like Murphy and Alexander finally getting pushed on TV. So, for me, I'm happy to see it. And I hope it continues. AJ Styles and Braun Strowman for the United States Championship. Rollins was not there, by the way, which is why he never came out. He was in one backstage segment on this show that was apparently taped the week before. Yeah, they do that a lot when Brock Lesnar comes in. They usually pre-tape stuff for the following week with him, you know, because it's rare that we get to see Brock Lesnar on Raw at all, let alone 2 weeks in a row. So I guess Rollins is on, or has been on vacation with his new bride-to-be. So with him away, they pre-taped his one segment this week. Anyway, referee got bumped, which allowed AJ to deliver an eye rake and a low blow to Braun. He grabbed a chair, he used it on Strowman. Braun fought back, hit the power slam, but there's no referee. So out come the Good Brothers. Braun fights him off with the chair. As AJ is getting up, he sees the chair in Braun's hands, and he sees the referee stirring, and he pulls an Eddie Guerrero, and he falls down, trying to trick the referee into thinking that Braun hit him with a foreign object. Referee sees the chair in Braun's hands, sees AJ down on the mat, calls for the DQ. Braun loses his shit, gives power slams to all three of them to end the show. I love the Eddie stuff. Crowd hated it, but I guess that's sort of the whole point. The Golden One Center in Sacramento will play host to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view on my birthday in October. Can't wait. And they tweeted out a spoiler for the show this week. They were advertising The Fiend. Bray Wyatt will be challenging either Seth Rollins or Braun Strowman, whoever the champion is, for the Universal title inside Hell in a Cell on that show. Now, originally, the advertised match for this pay-per-view was going to be Seth Rollins against Drew McIntyre, although I don't know if that match was ever advertised for the championship. But that, at one time, was one of the advertised matches for this show. These things do change. Apparently, this is not going to change, though. This is really the plan for that pay-per-view. The Fiend will headline his first ever pay-per-view and challenge for the championship. And I know some people think it's way too soon, or that, oh, the Fiend doesn't need the title. He's an Undertaker-type character who's above it. He doesn't need to be the champion. He shouldn't want the championship. Why would he want the championship? It's like he's beyond it somehow. Everyone on that roster should want to be the champion. Everyone. For him, could be his way of sticking it to the people who wronged him or said that he would never amount to anything. It's like the Huskus puppet from the Firefly Funhouse, right? People calling him, what would they call him? What do you call himself during the Funhouse segments? That, I don't know if it was Vince McMahon or somebody called him like a fat slob at one time. That could be, it could be, have something to do with that. You know, this is his way of showing those people, you know, that he's capable of doing more than they ever envisioned that he could possibly accomplish. You could always come up with a rationale, regardless of the type of character, for them to be the champion. Everybody should want to be the champion. Being the champion should be everything. As for whether it's too soon, I don't think it is. You know, but here's the thing. You are then, if he does win it, let's say he has the match, let's say they put the championship on him. Okay, you are now back to a situation where you have an absentee champion. If the idea is that the Fiend doesn't appear every week, which you don't want him to, because you want to keep him special. My guess is he'd still probably show up more often than Brock Lesnar did when he was the champion. Yeah, but the fact is, the Fiend is the hot act right now, and if they want to go with their hot hand, as long as they don't overexpose him, then I'm fine with that. But he has to win. He cannot be beaten. It is too early to be beaten. And they can't pull the same nonsense that they did last year in the Cell with Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, where they had a Hell in a Cell match last year for the championship that went to a no contest. Yes, a no contest inside Hell in a Cell. The referee called the match off. I don't know how many people remember that. You know, in the realm of bullshit finishes, that one is way up there. Way up there on the list. You cannot do the same thing again this year. He's got to win. So I'm all for the Fiend as champion if he wins. Then he can keep the title safe inside the Funhouse for a while. Ramblin' Rabbit can keep the tomato title nice and warm. And when Finn Balor comes back, which might happen as early as later that same month in October, you know, the Demon. They could build to the Demon challenging for the championship, let's say at Survivor Series, and then he too can be beaten. I'd go all the way to WrestleMania with him as champion, and maybe there he finally gets beaten for the first time. I like the idea, I've said this before, of building to the Fiend and Aleister Black. Problem is, Aleister Black is on the wrong show. But hey, wild card rule, right? Say when nothing matters, all you got to do is shout wild card. And it's all good. We should all do that in our lives. Any situation. Doesn't have to be wrestling related. If you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody, if you're sitting in class and the teacher says something that doesn't make sense, if you're at work and a colleague says something dumb that really doesn't make sense, all you got to do is shout wild card. And all of a sudden, everything makes sense. Nothing matters. I love these people who tweeted me. Because I see this news about there's rumors of a possible draft heading into, you know, when SmackDown launches on Fox. And I laugh. I laugh. I made a comment about, oh, wild card, it doesn't matter. And I got tweets from people, oh, well, you know, they're gonna have a draft. It's because of Fox. And I just laugh. Because people keep falling for it. They keep falling for the same shit all the time. Oh, this time it's going to be different. It's going to be different this time. It's going to be a real draft. Really? What evidence of this can you point to that they are going to finally be serious about keeping the roster separate and not doing the mixing that we've seen them doing now for months and months and months on end? What can you point to prove to me that they're actually going to be serious about that this time? I'm supposed to take that seriously? I'm supposed to care? That they're going to do a draft? Oh, this time it's going to be different. Really? Huh. Interesting. Fascinating. Tell me more. So I'm sure I'll get in on all the fun with everybody else if, in fact, they do have a draft as we get closer to October. And I'll get in on the fun and I'll have my own thoughts on who I think should go here and who I think should go there. But anybody who doesn't think that they're just going to blow this up and break their own rules within a couple of months, you haven't really been paying attention for very long. These people don't know how to execute a draft. They don't know how to do it. They don't care enough to do it. Nothing is going to change. Hey, listen up. The new NFL season is here. Antonio Brown is on the Raiders. Le'Veon Bell is with the New York Jets. Odell Beckham is in Cleveland. One thing that has not changed is where you should be putting your money down on all of the games. My bookie is the place to bet on football each weekend. They have better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sports book, period. This year, MyBookie is hosting the first online handicapping super contest. First place is guaranteed to win at least $100,000. It only costs $100 to enter. All you have to do is pick five NFL games against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of the huge cash prize pool. They have live in-game betting on every NFL game, plus the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. MyBookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, they pay. It's that simple. Sign up now and get up to $1,000 first deposit bonus. Double your first deposit. Use the promo code SOLOMONSTER to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And use the promo code SOLOMONSTER when creating your account to claim the bonus. You bet, you win, you get paid. MyBookie. So we move over to SmackDown. Baton Rouge, Louisiana was the location this past week. Twitter poll, over 2,300 votes. 20% up. 19% thumbs down. 61% did not watch. Another SmackDown, another week where Vince McMahon reportedly tore up the script hours before the show. $1 billion is what Fox paid for this show. $1 billion. Kofi Kingston was out to talk about Randy Orton attacking Xavier Woods and bringing his family into things. Orton popped up on the big screen calling Kofi stupid over and over again. Either that or he just got out of a creative meeting. I don't know. He said someone sent him a letter, and he wanted to go ahead and read it to Kofi. He says, "Dear Mr. Orton, stop hurting Kofi, because it makes him cry at night." The letter that he then revealed was from Kofi's son, or so he claimed. He also realized that he's staying in the same hotel as Kofi's family, so he figures he might just go pay Kofi's son a visit. Kofi ran to the back. They brawled until Orton laid him out with a draping DDT. I like the idea that Kofi's son, how old is Kofi's son? Kofi's son can't be more than, what, 5 years old? 6 years old, if that? He's a young kid. I love the idea that Kofi's son wrote Randy Orton a letter. Nobody writes letters anymore. Nobody does snail mail anymore. Most kids, they would have sent Orton a tweet. They would have sent him a snap. Is that what it is? A snap? In Snapchat? What's the other one? WhatsApp? He would have sent him a what? Maybe a private message on Facebook? But no, Kofi's son actually took the time to write this man a letter. I respect that. That's good parenting right there. King of the Ring action. Mustafa Ali and Buddy Murphy, they put on a fun show here. I enjoyed their match. And so did the fans who gave this a "this is awesome" chant. Ali hit a tilt-a-whirl draping DDT, which I can't say that I don't think I've seen that before. That was pretty cool. So he hits that move and finished Murphy off with a 450 to advance to the quarterfinals. And yes, just to cut some of this off, because I've seen this discussion as well. Yes, Buddy Murphy lost. But Buddy Murphy now has had three very good matches in a row on television with Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, and now Mustafa Ali. And after the match, he shook Ali's hand and he raised his arm, which may have turned him babyface if he already wasn't a babyface. A loss here did not hurt him. I doubt that Ali is going to go on to win the entire thing, nor would Murphy have had he advanced. I think that's the key to remember here. People, they buried him or they cut off his momentum. No, they didn't. And even if he beat Ali, do you really think Murphy was going all the way to the finals and winning this tournament? Of course not. So I thought the way they did it was fine. They had a competitive match. He was respectful and a great sportsman when it was over. And that's three really good matches on TV in a row. That's going to help his stock going forward. The Miz challenged Shinsuke Nakamura to a match for the Intercontinental Championship at Clash of Champions. Sami Zayn interrupted. He said that he liberated Nakamura. He called Nakamura the King of Strong Style. Miz, meanwhile, is the King of Soft Style. And Miz came out of the ring to go attack him. And in so doing, Nakamura came up from behind and attacked him. He gave him a Kinshasa up against the LED apron. Second Kinshasa inside the ring. Now, there was an interesting tweet that was put up by WrestleVotes on Twitter. One of the ideas, it claims, that's been batted around. When this Nakamura-Zayn thing first was pitched and first came together, when the storyline was initially conceived, the idea was for it to mirror the Chris Jericho-Kevin Owens storyline, in a way, and lead to a big blow-off match, possibly at WrestleMania. I think it would take great restraint on WWE's part not to give up on this or just to blow it off well before WrestleMania next year, but I would love to see them do it. I'd love to see them do it with Sammy going babyface in the end and beating Nakamura to win the championship. Sammy's been a heel now for a few years. It's been a very long time since we've seen him do the underdog babyface deal that he was so great at doing in NXT. He was gone for a very long time, many, many months. I think it was maybe 9 months or more. With his injury, he came back again, still as a heel. I think you play it where after several months of this, you let this go on for a while, after several months of this, he wants to challenge Nakamura for the championship, maybe even in just like a friendly exhibition. And that could be where Shinsuke just goes all strong style on him in a way that we haven't seen from him since he's come to WWE, and he just destroys Sammy. He doesn't need him anymore. Make Sammy a sympathetic figure, and now he's got to fight his way to the championship at WrestleMania. I'd rather it be Zayn turning than Nakamura, just because it would be the story of Sammy trying to win the title, not the champion defending it. I just think it makes for a better story, and you can play off the fact that in their one match in NXT, Nakamura's a rival. He beat Sami Zayn. And he says, Sammy, you can't beat me. I've already beaten you before. You can't beat me. So this is as much about Zayn trying to prove that he can beat Nakamura as much as it would be him trying to become the champion. If you wanted to go the other way with it, you can certainly do so, which is Sammy just gets so full of himself and so obnoxious that the people are dying. They're practically begging for Nakamura to just kick this guy's ass and break away from him. But then where do you go? I don't think the story then is as strong. I don't think it works as well as if you do it the other way. We have Bayley against Lacey Evans. This was no good. Lacey was very rough here. She looked like she may have forgotten a few things along the way. I don't know. You know, Bayley did what she could to keep it together. I just didn't think this was very good. And worse, they gave this match 14 minutes. 14! That is 10 minutes more than it needed. Bayley won with the elbow off the top. Randy Orton beat Big E with some help from the Revival, so that helped further that storyline along. Chad Gable beat Shelton Benjamin in the other first-round King of the Ring match. Before the match, Shelton was backstage making short jokes about Gable. On commentary, Corey Graves cracked a bunch of short jokes, wouldn't shut up about it. Powerbomb attempt by Shelton into a sunset flip by Gable. Rolls up Benjamin for the win. This was criminally short, no pun intended. Too short to be anything good. And it annoys me greatly that they gave Bayley and Lacey Evans 14 minutes. But they gave Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin, in a King of the Ring match, less than 4. This did not even go a full 4 minutes. Someone wrote this show down on paper and thought it would be better to give Bayley and Lacey Evans 14 minutes and give these two men less than half of that. Mind-boggling. So Gable advances. At least he won. He now faces Andrade in the next round, and here's what I'm thinking about this whole King of the Ring thing. As I am now looking at the way things are playing out, I see it as being Andrade over Gable, and then he beats Ali as well, and Almas goes all the way to the finals of the tournament. Over on the Raw side, Ricochet, I think, beats Samoa Joe, and he beats Baron Corbin as well, we can all hope, for a Ricochet versus Andrade final at Clash of Champions, with Ricochet probably being the favored, I would think anyway, the favorite to win the entire thing. That's my new prediction. We get Ricochet and Andrade in the finals, which sounds incredible, and Ricochet ends up winning the King of the Ring. But I do propose this. What if this Chad Gable, you're too short, shorty this, shorty that, you know, basically bullying the guy. What if the story here were that Gable somehow beats Andrade and Elias, let's say, beats Ali, and then Elias loses to Gable with an assist, let's say, from Kevin Owens, costing Elias the match. And then over on the Raw side, Ricochet beats Joe, Corbin beats Cedric, and Corbin beats Ricochet, leading to Corbin against Gable in the finals of the King of the Ring. Not that that's a huge marquee match or anything, but they're telling an underdog story here, it seems like, with Chad Gable. Baron Corbin is about as hated a heel left in this tournament as you could possibly put him in the ring with. You know, I said on Twitter they could recreate some of those spots from that tag team match that the two of them were involved in back at TakeOver Respect. I mean, my God, when was that? That was what, 5 years ago now? 4 or 5 years ago, that TakeOver show? That was a great match, a great finish. They could use the same finish. That little tilt-a-whirl deal where he turned it into the End of Days. But the downside of that means that we would be getting King Corbin, which I don't want to see. So, even though I proposed that as an idea, I just put that out there. Sorry, Chad. I think I'll stick with Ricochet and Andrade as my preferred final, with Ricochet winning. A rare babyface king. You know, I said at the beginning when I was first talking about King of the Ring 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and I was outlining the history of things and how many heel winners we've had over babyface winners. I think we've had like 11 heels and only 3 or 4 faces. And I said the odds seem to favor. And just the nature of the gimmick. You know, some guy walking around proclaiming himself to be king. It is an inherently heel gimmick. So I figured we were going to have a heel winner. Maybe we will. But I'm thinking now Ricochet is going to go all the way in this thing. Roman Reigns was out to the ring to close out the show. Tom Phillips, by the way, referred to Roman on commentary as the best performance fighter. So it sounds like that's going to be a thing after all on TV. Daniel Bryan interrupted him on the big screen, and Bryan demanded that Reigns apologize for thinking that he and Rowan had anything to do with either of his murder attempts. Reigns then showed footage of the forklift attack. I don't know where this footage was. I guess it was lost somewhere. It was in the Lost and Found that somebody dug it up after all these weeks. And this footage appeared to show Rowan, or somebody who looked a lot like Eric Rowan, present at the scene when the forklift nearly killed Roman Reigns. So Bryan sees this. He grows enraged. He slaps Rowan in the face a bunch of times, and Rowan walks off, and Bryan grabs a microphone as he's walking through the backstage area, trying to navigate his way to the ring. He's saying repeatedly he didn't know anything about this, and he hates liars, he doesn't like liars. I mean, yet he works for Vince McMahon, go figure. He said, somebody must have told Rowan to do it, but it wasn't me. It wasn't me, and as he climbed into the ring, Reigns obviously didn't believe him, and he gave him a spear. This thing is just dragging on now. At least make it interesting. We're just about at the point here where this thing has just jumped the shark with me. So I hope they have some kind of interesting twist or something, or maybe it's just Bryan coming out and just admitting he himself was lying. You know, for a guy who doesn't like liars, it would be kind of strange if the end game here is that we find out Bryan did it, which everybody assumes he did, and that he himself was lying. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. I was sorry to hear that Bryan's French bulldog Josie died this week. He had just posted a photo on Instagram of Josie laying in his suitcase, I guess, as he was trying to pack, go back on the road. And he said, oh, it looks like she never wants me to leave home again. And literally the next day, after he posted that photo and he posted that tweet or Instagram post, Brie posted a long message on her page saying that Josie just died. Like, unexpectedly, out of nowhere, the dog, I don't know what happened, but the dog died. So that's terrible. That's terrible. It sucks losing a pet, so I was very bummed to hear that. NXT. This was the best hour of NXT television in a while, which is not to say the show has been bad, but this was just a really good show. That if they keep this up, they're going to give AEW a run for its money on Wednesday nights. I'll say that much. Io Shirai opened the show with a squash win over Cammy Fields. She hit her moonsault, but pulled Cammy up off the mat before the three because she's evil. She's evil Io now. Instead, she won with her new submission finish, the same one that she used to beat Candice LeRae in Toronto. Shirai pulled a kendo stick out from under the ring and was about to use it on Fields. All of a sudden, Candice, speak of the devil, she makes the save. And so she took the stick and she started swinging it, and Io got the hell out of Dodge. I'm here for the rematch between these two. Make it a kendo stick match. Let them show Bayley and Alexa Bliss how a real kendo stick match is supposed to work. Then we had Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic. I've been waiting a long time to see this match again, and they did not disappoint. Where are all the people who love to dump on NXT for all the little guys doing flippy shit? Where are all these people? Raise your hands. Raise your hands. Where are the people who love to talk about the little guys doing flippy shit? This should be right up your alley. It's big guys doing flippy shit. What's not to love? Lee destroyed him with a lariat for a near fall. Then he propelled him up into the air and dumped him hard on the apron with a spine buster, basically, is what it was. That looked gnarly. Dijakovic later hit a Fosbury flop to the floor. This man is like, what is he, 6'6"? Doing a Fosbury flop? Are you kidding me? Back inside, Dijakovic comes off the top rope for something, maybe a cannonball, whatever he was going for. Lee catches him. So now he's hanging upside down. Lee muscles him up into a powerbomb position, but Dominik lands on his feet, tosses Lee with a suplex, picked him up for a suplex, and just chucked him. Now Lee is 300-plus pounds, chucks him across the ring. Moonsault by Dijakovic for a two count. He goes back up again. Lee catches him, climbs up himself, so now both these guys are up top, and he gives Dijakovic a Spanish fly off the top rope. Dijakovic almost broke his neck on the landing. It looked like that on the replay, but that was a sight to behold. And he only got a near fall out of it. Crowd bought into it as a near fall, so did I. It didn't bother me as much as if, let's say, it was like a Canadian destroyer off the top rope and the guy kicked out. That would have just infuriated me. The crowd is losing its mind. Dijakovic gets Lee up across his shoulders for the Feast Your Eyes finish, and he picks up the win. I love this match, and I hope we get one more. Maybe that first live show in a few weeks on USA on September 18th. But this is exactly what I expected their rematch to be. This is exactly what I hoped their rematch would be like. And the crowd ate it up. I ate it up. It delivered, and I can't wait to see more. Shayna Baszler and her fellow horsewomen came to the ring for a promo, but before she could say anything, Rhea Ripley's music hit from NXT UK, and Rhea came out. She got a superstar reaction in Full Sail. Everybody knows who Rhea Ripley is. She went nose to nose with Shayna. She ripped the microphone out of her hand before she could speak, and she said, "You keep talking about how you've beaten everyone. I know what you're going to say. You're going to talk about how you've beaten everyone." She says, "You haven't beaten me, bitch." And the crowd popped. You know, the bitch line on WWE television at this point is like Mick Foley mentioning the name of whatever city he's in. It's like the new cheap pop, but it worked. It worked here with Rhea. She came across like a total badass. Baszler backed down from her. How often do we see that? There's another match that they could do right there on that first live show on September 18th, or if they want to, they could wait until October 2nd for that first head-to-head show against AEW. Shayna Baszler against Rhea Ripley. Title or non-title? Doesn't even have to be for the championship. It really doesn't. It doesn't even matter, I don't think, whether it's a title match or not. And, you know, you'll have people who say, well, why would she get a title match? Shouldn't she have to work her way up for it? It doesn't make sense. She just comes in and she's gifted a title shot right away. So, and I understand that, and that is the logical view of this to take, but that doesn't mean you can't still do the match, whether it's for the championship or not. I think that you could do the match, let's say even if the title isn't on the line, right? It's just built on the idea of you've beaten everybody, but you've never beaten me. So beat me. Let's see who wins. It's about bragging rights. And then if she does win, she certainly would earn herself a championship match. But I do think she would be a great choice to take that title off of Shayna. Thing is, you've got Dakota Kai about to come back soon. And when she was last on TV, usually she was being tortured by Shayna Baszler. So that could be, you know, a great comeback story if they want to have Dakota Kai be the one to take the championship off of Shayna. The other option is Candice LeRae. Candice LeRae, who also I think would make for a great underdog challenger to Shayna Baszler. And either one of them, if they were to take the title from Baszler, could then drop the championship sometime after that to Io Shirai. And we get heel Io as the women's champion in NXT and Shayna moves on. So that would leave Rhea Ripley. If you say, well, what happens with Rhea? Does she just go back to NXT UK? What do you do with her? There is another opponent for Rhea Ripley. Her name is Tegan Nox. Tegan Nox is only now recently back from the injury. That was the one where her knee basically exploded in the match with Rhea during the Mae Young Classic, which Nox was favored to win, and she got bounced after the injury. She and Ripley can feud. I think these are the more likely scenarios, to be honest with you, than Ripley taking the championship away from Shayna. And the thing with Rhea, she's only 22. I think she turns 23 in October, but she's 22 years old. And she already comes across like a total star. So you don't really have to rush things here. The Street Profits defended the NXT Tag Team Championship in a rematch from TakeOver Toronto against the Undisputed Era. And I thought that this was good. Not as good as their TakeOver match, but still pretty good. They spent time, Fish and O'Reilly did, working over Ford's knee. Dawkins tagged in, started suplexing everybody. Chasing the Dragon gets a two count on Angelo Dawkins. Followed by a heel hook attempt, foiled by Montez Ford, who made the save. Ford hits the Uranage on O'Reilly, and Dawkins comes flying off the top rope for a frog splash for a near fall. Not nearly as impressive as Montez Ford doing the frog splash, but I give him an A for effort. Ford did try for a frog splash of his own a couple of minutes later. The height that this guy gets on that move, it's just, it's unlike anything that I've ever seen before. But he misses, and the high-low, the total elimination, call it whatever you will, it's effective. And it wins the Undisputed Era, the NXT Tag Team Championship, for the third time. They become the first team ever to win the NXT Tag Team titles three times. Three-peat. That means only Roderick Strong now, in Undisputed Era, is missing gold in that group. Unless Adam Cole were to lose the NXT title to Jordan Miles in their match coming up this week, which he won't. That's not a spoiler, that's just common sense. So it looks like Velveteen Dream is probably going to drop that title to Roddy sometime in the next month or two. I don't see how you can drape three out of the four of these guys in gold and leave one of them out. So I think Undisputed Era is going to end up with all the titles very soon. So I thought this was an excellent episode. I recommend that everybody take the time to go watch while you still can, while the show is still an hour long, before it's too late. Definitely give this a watch. The Enzo Amore big cast stuff, that was a big rumor in the news this week. It was from a report that originated in The Observer. Meltzer had reported that WWE had reached out to them about a potential return. There was no word on whether or not Kaz and or Enzo were interested in coming back, but that the idea was that they would be positioned as two of the top stars on the NXT brand when NXT moves to USA. And it was not long after that was reported in The Observer that I think Meltzer himself came out and said, not true. As PW Insider said that, you know, this is not going to happen. It's a rumor killer. And then Meltzer said, yep, not going to happen. And it was kind of weird because Meltzer ended up denying his own report. As far as I could tell, it originated with him. And then he's denying his own report. It was a bad look. But Triple H did an interview with TalkSport. And he immediately said that he had his PR guy, once this rumor bubbled up, he had his public relations guy put word out right away that, yeah, no, zero interest. Those were his exact words. Zero interest. He said, congrats to Enzo I'm sure spreading rumors has worked well for him, but he said he just doesn't want to be part of it. It's very obvious, just watching the way the Triple H said it and listening to him say it, he is not an Enzo Amore fan, which is too bad, really, because he used to be. You know, Enzo came up through that system. I think Enzo was actually somebody who was recommended to him by, what's that guy, Joe DeFranco? I think there's some connection there. That's his trainer. And he became a big fan of Enzo's when he brought him in, and he obviously could talk, and they put him together with Kaz. And remember on one of those network specials when they show Triple H in the back telling them that they're getting the big call-up and they're going to make their debut on Monday Night Raw? What? It was such an emotional moment. Clearly Triple H used to, at one point, have a love for these two guys and for Enzo, and now you listen to him talk about this guy, and he has just... It's hard, I mean, it's not hard to understand why, but he has just soured on this guy. He says, you are not going to spread rumors at our expense. I am going to cut that shit off right away. He goes, no interest whatsoever. And no, I don't think it's a work. I don't think he's saying that to throw the scent off. I really think he has zero interest in bringing these two guys, or at least Enzo, bringing him back to the company, let alone positioning them at the top or near the top of his NXT brand. So that was a rumor that was created this past week and died all in the same week. Kaz and Enzo are not coming back to WWE or to NXT. Time for this week's RSPW Rewind, which has turned into one of the more popular segments on the show in a very short period of time, which I'm very happy to see. On Friday, TNT aired a preview special for this weekend's AEW All Out pay-per-view, which marked the first time that pro wrestling aired on TNT, and maybe any of the Turner networks, since 2001. 18 years ago. That was when WCW went out of business. So from 96 to 98, at the peak of their popularity, it would have been unfathomable. As popular as they were, and with the money they had behind them from Turner, that they would go under, let alone go under less than 5 years later, but they did. And the wrestling business has been worse off for it. In 1999, WCW was already on its way down. The cracks were there, and it was a slow decline, but they were already on their way down. And it spawned this post from somebody named Blassie on July 8th, 1999, 20 years ago. The subject line was, serious post, can WCW actually go out of business or shut down? He or she says, more likely Time Warner would sell it to someone, but only if corporate-wide losses became so bad that they had to do massive cutbacks. I don't know how well or badly Time Warner is doing overall, but I can't see that ever happening. And even if they did decide to sell, it would not be to VKM, VKM of course being Vincent Kennedy McMahon, since he and Turner hate each other so much. And as somebody pointed out later on in this thread, by this point, Ted Turner no longer owned WCW. Ted Turner no longer had any real power or control over the company. So, scroll down a little bit. There's a response from ATL Rick. Rick says, I believe Time Warner actually lost money last year, but WCW turned a profit. Even with the drop in ratings, WCW is still profitable as a venture for Time Warner. They won't be selling or dissolving it anytime soon. That brought in Stunna Time, and Stunna Time was offended by Blassie's question. Says, WCW is giving Turner their highest ratings on their networks. Do you realize what a stupid question you just asked? WCW is owned by a billionaire. WWF has more of a chance of going out of business. It's not about ratings, it's about the money. Then Larry chimes in. The only way WCW could go out of business is if Time Warner sold it, and they'd have to be insane to do it. Yeah, let me stop here for a second. You ever get the feeling, you know, when you read an old thread like this, kind of go back in time, you get this feeling of wishing that you could jump in a time machine and just warn people of what was yet to come. Like, I get that same feeling when I read these old WCW threads. So anyway, that's what Larry says. Larry says that they'd have to be insane to sell off WCW. Which brings us to N.E. Seifort. N.E. Seifort says, WCW won't go out of business. They'll simply scale back. They'll cut people like Hogan and Savage. They'll wait a few years for the contracts of the WWF's current crop of stars to expire and try again with big money offers. We could see another mass exodus between 2001 and 2004, this time with Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H, Road Dogg, and Mankind leading the way. I love how he loves Road Dogg in there. Leading the charge back to WCW, got Stone Cold, Triple H, Mankind, and Road Dogg. I mean, Road Dogg was a popular act, don't get me wrong, but come on now. Road Dogg is going to lead the way to WCW? Really? So then we have The Great One. I don't know if that's his name, I don't know if that's just a descriptive term, but he calls himself The Great One. And The Great One says, WCW going out of business is almost impossible, but if it did happen, I bet Monday Night Raw would turn right back into the suckfest that it was before Nitro came on the air. This man was a prophet. The Great One was a prophet. So then there was one more thread that ties into all this. This one was from the following year, March 15th of 2000, in the old RSPW group, a post by Jimbo Jones, titled, What the Sheep Will Do When WCW Gets Canceled. He says, first, they'll keep doing what they usually do because they'll be in complete and utter denial. Then when it hits them, they'll be on 24-hour suicide watch, and half of them will probably do the dirty deed. Not that it matters, sheep aren't that important anyway. Then the remaining sheep that continue to post to this news group will do a complete 180 and praise Vince McGod and his wonderful WWF programming. It is inevitable, and when it happens, don't say I didn't tell you so. Now, his username was Jimbo Jones, but he signed his post as The Flying Fuck, which is a lot funnier and a much cooler name. In response to The Flying Fuck comes a post from DRK, who refers to himself as a self-professed Jerry Lynn disciple. I didn't even know Jerry Lynn had disciples. He says, everyone said ECW would be dead this time last year. Everyone said WCW would monopolize the ratings forever. What a difference a year makes. WCW can and will survive. Surprised DRK didn't break into some Gloria Gaynor when he wrote that. And finally, the voice of reason, from Bo Moindies. Vince McMahon, until he got the XFL, and Paul E. have nothing else but their feds, which has been their whole lives. But AOL Time Warner has hundreds of businesses, and WCW is not doing well. The bean counters who run huge companies don't give a shit about pro wrestling, they only care about profits. I do worry that one day soon, some AOL Time Warner bigwig is going to walk into Bill Bush's office and say that WCW has been canceled. They will buy out the wrestlers' contracts, sell off the pay-per-view slots, and schedule crappy movies for Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. Bill Bush doesn't care because he'll just get another job within the AOL Time Warner empire, but every pro wrestling fan, mark or smart, will be worse off. How very prescient of Bo Moindies. That AOL Time Warner bigwig turned out to be Jamie Kellner, who pulled the plug on Nitro and Thunder, and with them, the deal that Eric Bischoff thought that he had put together to buy the company. Some other fun facts about Mr. Kellner. He was the man responsible, while he was working for the WB Network, for canceling Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain. And then there's this gem here, which I had to dig this back up because it's just too good not to mention. While he was the chairman and the CEO of Turner Broadcasting, Jamie Kellner gave an interview to Cable World in 2002. So this was the year after he effectively killed WCW. In response to a question about why he felt PVRs, or personal video recorders like TiVo, were bad for the television industry. He said, because of the ad skips, it's theft, he said. Your contract with the network. Now, mind you, when he says your contract, he's talking about you and me, the viewer. Says your contract with the network when you get the show is you're going to watch the ad spots. Otherwise, you could not get the show on an ad-supported basis. Anytime you skip a commercial, you're actually stealing the programming. Do you hear that, people? Do you hear that? You have a contract. You may not remember signing one, but you have a contract. And that contract says that you cannot skip any ads, or else you are a thief. That's right. According to Jamie Kellner, you are a thief. You are stealing their programming. What this numbskull fails to understand is that I, as the viewer, am not entering into a contract with Turner or any other company to watch all of their commercials. That is not illegal. It wasn't then, and it isn't now. I especially like the beginning part of his answer to their follow-up question, which was, well, what if you have to go to the bathroom, or if you want to get up to go get a, you know, grab a Coke? And he says, well, I guess there's a certain amount of tolerance for going to the bathroom. Yeah, I guess. I guess so. So if Jamie Kellner had his way, you have to go take a leak? Too bad. You're going to have to sit there and piss your pants and watch these ads for fucking Pep Boys and the new Whopper. Tough shit. Imagine the aneurysm that this guy must have had once DVR was created. WCW died because Ted Turner wasn't there to protect it anymore. He had a loyalty to wrestling. Jamie Kellner had no such loyalty. And that's this week's RSPW Rewind. Stick a few mailbag questions here. You can always email them to me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Like Blake in Savannah, Georgia, WWE is celebrating the 40-year anniversary of the Intercontinental Championship this week on their YouTube channel. What are some of your favorite IC title matches of all time? Not necessarily the best, but your favorites. Well, I, for one, can remember sitting with my dad as a kid, watching footage, old footage of Pat Patterson winning the Intercontinental Championship in that tournament in Rio de Janeiro. Still one of the best tournaments that I've ever seen. I mean, who knew that Patterson could even do a 630? It was very impressive. That aside, when I think of the Intercontinental title, the first match I always think of, no matter what, is Bret Hart against Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam 91, Madison Square Garden. That is always the first one I think of. You have to think about Wembley. Whether you even like the match or not, and I did like the match, but you get these images in your head of 80,000 people watching IC title main eventing a pay-per-view for the first time. It was a big deal. So you think of Bret Hart against the British Bulldog. I think of Hulk Hogan against the Ultimate Warrior, WrestleMania 6. You know, people tend to forget it was also an Intercontinental Championship match. It was not just for the WWF title. I think of that. I think of Bret Hart and Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 8. Another big babyface versus babyface match for the belt. Both ladder matches between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, WrestleMania 10 and SummerSlam 95. If I had to pick a more recent match that is a favorite of mine, even though it was 10 years ago now, but compared to those other matches, it was more recent, is Chris Jericho and Rey Mysterio. Mask versus title. Hint, hint. And W.S. Fletcher, listener since episode 32, I had a conflict of conscience last night during the All Out show. I have an issue with Arn Anderson being at the pay-per-view. If I remember correctly, he let someone work drunk, and he seems to be rewarded for it. That is a level of negligence that has me seeing AEW as something I will not regularly devote my time to. Well, I don't know that anything was ever confirmed about that. That certainly was the story going around. There was a huge blow-up between Arn and Vince McMahon. Nobody's talking. I don't think Arn is allowed to talk about it per maybe whatever his severance is, or who knows what that situation is. So I don't know that we'll ever find out. I mean, he's got a new podcast starting up soon with Conrad. Well, what else is new? I mean, Conrad's starting podcasts with everybody. I have no idea if this will be addressed on there or not, but that was never confirmed exactly what, you know, what was the sequence of events there. Now, if he had gotten her drunk, I can understand that, you know, sharing a few backstage, hey, go on out there and work. But if the idea is that she was under the influence or she was in no condition to perform and he didn't pick up on it, yeah, that sounds negligent, but should that, you know, mean that he's blackballed from the industry? I mean, there are things that, you know, people do that you could say, okay, this guy should never work in this business again. I don't look at that as a situation where Arn Anderson should lose out on future job opportunities or should be blackballed or anything like that. So I don't look at it quite the same way. But like I said, we still don't have all the details of what happened. We have the rumors and the reports, but it's nothing that WWE has commented on, and it's nothing that Arn has come out and said. So we don't quite know what the deal is there. And there's still stories going around about Alicia Fox. You know, she was at Raw Reunion. There were stories around SummerSlam weekend that there was some other incident, again, unconfirmed. But clearly, she has some issues that she may have to deal with. I'm not saying that excuses Arn Anderson if he was negligent in this situation. And if that's what happened, I can understand Vince McMahon being upset and even letting him go. I think I even said that at the time. But does it upset me to see him come out at the All Out pay-per-view and give a spine buster and be part of the company? It doesn't. It doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't rise to that level where I feel like this guy should just sit on his ass at home for the rest of his life and, you know, not be given the opportunity to go work somewhere else. So I get Vince McMahon letting him go, but he should be able to go and find work wherever he wants to. And if you don't want to support AEW because of that, then that's certainly, hey, that's your opinion and you don't need to. If it makes you feel uncomfortable, then by all means, don't support AEW. But seeing him on the pay-per-view last night didn't bother me at all. I hadn't even thought about the Alicia Fox incident until you brought it up. I mean, but there's other considerations here as well, right? So Arn Anderson lost his job. Arn Anderson may have lost his job for possibly being negligent, and he was, let's say, the agent in charge, and this woman went out there, and maybe she was inebriated. Again, that's the story. Well, then why does she still have a job? How come he lost his job and she didn't? And this is hardly the first incident. You could ask that question as well. That doesn't make me any less likely to watch WWE because they still have her employed and they're still paying her. It's a weird situation. But no, it doesn't bother me at all seeing Arn in AEW. And in fact, I'm happy to see him there. We're counting down the 8 best matches in the career of Rey Mysterio on our way to Sound Off episode 619 later this month. Last week, I talked about Psicosis as one of Rey's all-time great opponents and a man he had maybe more matches with. I don't know about anyone else, but those two had a lot of matches together. They had a lot of battles together very early on in their career. Another one of Rey's greatest opponents was Juventud Guerrera. I'm sure a lot of you remember their matches together in WCW, and even before WCW, there was ECW. There was ECW's big-ass Extreme Bash in 1996. Rey and Hoovy had back-to-back, 2 out of 3 falls matches on back-to-back nights, the first night being in Queens, New York, at the Lost Battalion Hall, March 8th, 1996, a match that Guerrero won 2 falls to 1. I want to read to you from the Observer at the time about this show. Night 1 of the Big Ass Extreme Bash, which doesn't sound like it went all too well. The show in Queens was a study of everything that can go wrong with the idea of presenting a hard-edge, ultra-violent concept on television that encourages fan participation. The next night, the show was an example of nearly everything positive about that very same concept. The wrestlers were the same, the angles were similar, the quality of the matches, while overall better in Philadelphia, weren't all that different. The biggest difference was the crowd. The big-ass bash in New York was a depressing night among the most depressing nights that I've ever spent watching pro wrestling. The creation of the mad scientist, combined with numerous other forces such as freezing weather, bad sight lines, and just living in New York, led to an audience with no respect for the incredible amount of work that he and his company put into the show. It was an audience that was the reality of the worst John McCain fantasy about what violence and UFC are supposed to be about. At a team meeting the next night, Paul Heyman said that the show sucked and took the blame himself, saying he tried to give people something they did not want to see, and the next time he would give them what they came for. However, for a group whose logo is its initials wrapped in bloody barbed wire, a group that regularly uses props like a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire and whose fans have been encouraged to hand wrestlers everything, including the kitchen sink, there were items as bizarre as hockey sticks confiscated from fans as they entered the building. Running a show in front of a strict commission with a self-imposed blood ban, it's going to be very hard to give that audience what it came to see. The reaction while Rey Mysterio Jr. and Juventud Guerrera were putting on one of the best technical matches in the history of the city, and maybe the entire country, was that they wanted the midgets out of there because they figured out they weren't going to bleed. That was not the case the next night in Philly, which brings us to number 6 in our countdown. Rey Mysterio Jr. against Juventud Guerrera, 2 out of 3 falls from night 2. Of the big-ass extreme bash from the ECW Arena on March 9th, 1996. This aired on ECW Hardcore Television on March 19th, for those of you who want to go watch it on the network. You can also find it on Mysterio's The Life of a Masked Man DVD that WWE put out many years ago, where they actually list this match as having taken place at the extreme bash. So I guess no big asses here. Here, Mysterio was looking to avenge his loss to Hoovy the night before. You know, these old ECW shows on the network are nearly unwatchable because of all the music dubs. I'm not talking about this episode, I'm just saying in general, but to not watch them, if that's the only thing holding you back from going back and watching them, to not watch them means that you're missing out on some classics. And this was one of them. This show actually had Mick Foley's final ECW match as Cactus Jack before debuting on Raw as Mankind just a few weeks later. And I believe that this ended up being the final ECW match for both Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrera, both of whom ended up going to WCW a few months later. So this was kind of an important show. I just think that this is an excellent match in front of the perfect crowd. Whatever happened in New York the night before, and based on what Meltzer is saying there, apparently it was just a total disaster and even Paul Heyman thought the show sucked. I cannot say the same about this show. This was the perfect match in front of the perfect crowd. Juventud wins the first fall with a dragon suplex. Second fall, now Rey comes off the top rope, takes Hoovy off the apron, down to the concrete floor with a Hurricanrana, same move he used on Psychosis during their Bash at the Beach match that I had last week in number 7. And that looked cleaner than this did, but I assume that, you know, the floor here was completely exposed. I don't think there were any mats on the floor at all. So this guy is being taken off the apron down to the concrete. There's less real estate between the ring and the metal barricade than they had, with Rey and Psychosis in WCW. So, you know, Juventud kind of braced himself, and that's completely understandable. But Rey hits the same move, and Guerrera's down, Rey's back in the ring. Referee is poking his head through the ropes, looking down at Juventud, just trying to check on him, make sure he's okay. Rey says, the hell with this. He hits the ropes. He vaults over John Finnegan. He vaults over the referee and out onto Guerrera on the floor. Back inside, Rey hits a lion salt for a near fall. Finally hits a doctor bomb, or a gut-wrench power bomb, to even the match at one fall apiece. Surprise, surprise. 2 out of 3 falls match is going to a third fall. Third fall gets even crazier. Juventud knocks Rey into the first row. Climbs up onto the ring apron, hits a springboard moonsault onto Mysterio in the crowd. They bring it back into the ring before going back outside. And I'm watching this, and all of a sudden this guy stands up from his seat, and he hands Rey a chair, and I'm looking, and it's Straw Hat Guy. There were a lot of fans at ECW who actually became sort of gimmicks unto themselves. They became almost like superstars in their own right. a lot cooler than the ones today. You know, today we have the guy in the green shirt with the shitty goatee, and we've got the guy with the long hair who goes to every show with his mom or his sugar mama, whoever it is. These are not cool fans. Straw hat guy, he was a cool guy. It takes some balls to walk around wearing that hat and that shirt, let alone wearing that to the ECW arena. So Straw Hat Guy stands up, and he hands Rey Mysterio a chair, which he uses to bash Hoovy in the head. Now they're brawling through the crowd. We can't see him. They've got a camera now following them right out of the building and out onto the street. Joey Styles says, oh, they're on the corner of Swanson and Rittner. And these guys are outside, and they're beating the hell out of each other, and Hoovy powerbombs Rey on top of the hood of a parked car. I hope that's not Howard Finkel's car. We'll see how many of you get that reference. Guerrero goes to grab him. Rey kicks him away. And Rey stands up on the hood of the car and hits a leaping Hurricanrana. Takes Guerrero down onto the concrete. They come back inside the building. Rey wraps a chair around this guy's head. Fans start chanting, "We want tables." Now, the table has been the most consistently overperformer in wrestling for 20-plus years. Thousands of bumps this table has taken. There is a table there. I think it was the timekeeper's table. It's like a long wooden table. Rey puts it in position, gets back into the ring. Guerrero gets him up on the top rope in position for a Splash Mountain. And Rey reverses it into a Frankensteiner on the way down for the win. That's the same finish that Rey and Psychosis would use a few months later in their Bash at the Beach match. It's a very cool finish. So Rey wins, but he's not done yet. The great babyface that he is, he's not done kicking Juventud's ass. He takes him out to the floor, they get up on the table, and Rey powerbombs Hoovy through the table that he had set up a couple of minutes earlier, but did not have the chance to use until now. See, he's a man of the people. He wanted to make sure that he gave the people that table bump that they wanted. And he did. So I thought it was just a fun 2 out of 3 falls affair that got crazier as it went on, a very memorable match, and after this, they would be on their way to WCW, and Rey would go on to become a World Heavyweight Champion in WWE, while Juventud would go on to become part of the Mexicools in WWE and ride a lawnmower to the ring. The tale of two careers. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster is my handle on there. The ebook version of The Adventure of Hardy the Horse, my mom's children's book, is now available. So if you want to get the book on Kindle, if you just go to the Amazon page, you can buy it in hardcover, or you can buy it on Kindle. I prefer the hardcover stuff. I understand it's more expensive, but you can't replace some of these photos that I've been getting. I mean, you guys have been sending in photos of me holding the book, or your son or daughter, nieces and nephews being read the book and reading the book, and that's just the coolest thing. So by all means, please keep sending those photos in, keep tweeting those photos to me, because I love seeing them. But yes, the ebook version is now available if that is more in line with what you were looking for. And please leave a review for the book on the Amazon page, which is always very helpful. I will be back for a brand new podcast next Sunday, as always. That'll be episode 616. So I wish everybody a very happy and hopefully restful Labor Day holiday for those of you celebrating here in this country. And until next time, be well, stay safe, and I will see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, have a great holiday, guys. I'll see you next Sunday.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Roman referred to himself as, quote, the best performance fighter alive. Performance fighter? Holy shit. Is everybody not named Dolph Ziggler in that company afraid to just call themselves professional wrestlers? Do they have an allergic reaction if they refer to themselves as a professional wrestler? Does their throat close up? Do their eyes swell shut? Do they have to have an EpiPen stuck in their leg? I mean, I don't understand this. I wonder if there is any other industry in the world where people willingly sign up, but they're afraid to actually admit what they do. Porn. That's the closest thing I could think of. Porn.
The Solomonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/TheSolomonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Solomonster on Twitter, @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solomonster Sounds Off.